Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later on in today's episode. All right, as we promised, friends, it is the second installment of what we are affectionately referring to as On Point with Matt Brooks. He joins myself and Doug Norrie on this episode. We talk about the KD injury and where he's feeling and that sense of expectations, fear around his return or lack thereof for the Brooklyn Nets so far. We try to get him to commit to some thoughts around what LaMarcus Aldridge can be when he finally makes his debut for the Brooklyn Nets. And then we really get into the bigs, the Blake Griffin sample size so far, how that mixes in with DeAndre Jordan and Nicholas Claxton. And then, of course, I have to find out why the Nets can't seem to get that darn ball in bounds. It's all coming up on just an amazing episode with the fantastic Matt Brooks. But before we do, it's the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day, except weekends. I'm Doug Norrie, owner, operator, DFSR.com. Got you covered for all your NBA betting action. MLB, too. Can't believe that season is just 48 hours away from starting, but who cares about baseball? Because over there is also Adam Armbrecht. He's the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, also the host of the One Giant podcast covering the New York Giants, but who cares about football? And also on the line with us today is the great Matt Brooks from Nets Daily, here to talk about the Brooklyn Nets. We had a name for the segment. I wrote it down. I clicked away from the thing, and I've already forgotten what the name is. Matt will remind me and chastise me later, but for now, Matt, how are we doing?
I'm good. On Point is the name of the segment. There we go. Look at me. Point. I'm a great guest already.
You don't get to sit in the big chair like I do by just remembering the little stuff. Okay, that's I don't concern myself with the little things like that. I'm a macro thinker. Matt is here. He's going to be coming on bi-weekly, as Adam and I were lamenting the fact that the word in the English lexicon and dictionary bi-weekly can mean two things. It can mean once every 2 weeks or twice a week. We're going to do the bi-weekly former here with Matt Brooks, where he's going to be coming on talking Brooklyn Nets basketball with us for now through the rest of the season. Really excited to get his expertise here. And we'll kick it off right away. Matt, the thing that we've been sort of dancing around, not really wanting to commit to spending too much time to talk about it, partly because the thought of it coming true is maybe too painful. Where are you right now in the Kevin Durant rehab timeline? Not where you are, like, I know you're not rehabbing alongside him. Where are you in your level of concern with Kevin Durant? And every time I get an update on my phone through Twitter, it says Kevin Durant, and then it says like another couple weeks or something like that. Where are you, level of one to terrified? Where are you right now in worrying about kind of where he is coming back for the Nets?
They keep saying it's the final stages. Like, I feel like it's been the final stages of the last 2 weeks. So I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, I this is why you get 3 stars, right? Like, you can weather this storm. Can you imagine, like, if there was no James Harden and this happened and you're running into, I mean, where would the Nets be if it was, you know, look, like, respects to Kyrie, but we kind of know what the Kyrie-led Nets looks like. It's, you know, it's above 500, maybe. So that's why you do this. So I think, in a sense, my level of concern isn't huge just because you have 2 other stars to carry the load. I do feel like there's going to be at least a month to kind of get him back in the swing of things. And KD, it just, like, I mean, we saw it when he even first came back after not playing for 2 years. His game isn't intensive. Like, it isn't something where it's like this guy, you know, he's taken however many 20 pick and rolls a game. It's so, you know, it's tough to get into shape that way. Like, he's just streaking off pin downs, you know, coming in and out, playing on switches and stuff like that. So I'm not concerned in that way. It's just a matter of, like, do they get him there in time for that last month of the season, really? That's kind of what I'm looking at right now.
We had done that timeline, Doug and I, the last couple of weeks of saying, well, where's the threshold, right? What is the cutoff date to say you need him back by X point? I think – again, on that spectrum of how terrified do we want to be, we say, and you technically could use the first round of the playoffs if you needed to. And that seems to maybe need to get added into there as well. But, you know, Josh Lloyd actually on the network just asked me this same kind of question the other day. And it was, he said, when do you expect him back this week? Because they said 1 to 2 weeks on the 15th. And I was like, yeah. But that was 1 to 2 weeks until you decide what it looks like for now, the return of the timeline. So we keep waiting with bated breath to find out. And I guess we're kind of in the same boat as you, right? He doesn't look like a guy that's going to be overtaxed in his return. Everything seems very fluid. And I still want him on the court. But you mentioned having James Harden and the importance of having James Harden. Doug, aptly, I think you read the article the other day, Doug, that Matt, you assert now that Harden deserves to be entrenched in that MVP conversation. It seems like some people fall on the spectrum of saying, well, you can't be an MVP if you do what you did to get out of Houston. I look at it and say, you can't not be the MVP if you're on this Brooklyn Nets team and you're on the win streak that they're on. And it's very clearly correlated to James Harden and his consistency and availability for this team.
I'm looking up where the Nuggets are because that's the only player I think right now that can even you know, contend for MVP with you know, with Harden this year.
Monte Morris.
Monte Morris, yeah.
We all knew where you were going, but it's good that Doug said it out loud.
Yeah, no, that's what I wanted to go with here. No, but I mean, in all seriousness, it becomes like it's going to be an interesting year because, you know, we usually, there's like this general understanding that you give the MVP to a guy that's on one of the top two seeds in each in either conference. Well, here's the problem. The Lakers without LeBron and AD, they're going to fall. So, and LeBron really hasn't been an MVP candidate. I think he's a candidate, but he hasn't been a leader really in about a month. You know, you have Jokic, who is going to be on a team that is what maybe, I mean, they can maybe creep up into that top four. I don't know. They've been kind of odd this year. I know they're 7-3 right now, but it seems like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how high the ceiling goes. So then it becomes like a question of what does this turn into? Right now, this is the, you know, it makes a lot of sense to give it to Harden just because he's on a top seeded team and he's clearly the best player in the league right now. So all the narratives behind, well, he doesn't, and I get it. Look, it wasn't the cleanest exit. He's kind of been on record saying it was an embarrassing way to leave. And I think he was genuinely serious about that. It's a tricky thing. And I think that, because of that, yeah, like I do think he should probably win MVP this year.
If his name was anybody else but James Harden, we wouldn't even be talking about it. It's really just like that's kind of where it boils down to, because like statistically, team leadership wise, really just everything, buy in, it all, like just where they are with the record. The literally checkboxes lands on every single other thing. It's just that I get it. Like he gets dinged for having been there before, and gets dinged for the piece with Houston. Real in terms, just kind of going back real quick on the Harden and sort of Durant thing, how much, and we're going to talk about big men rotations here in a second. Adam had brought this up, like we did this offline I think the other day, so I don't think we said it as a segment. Do you think that like some of these also veteran moves, you don't need to speak specifically to how they're going to factor in, we're going to talk about that in a second, but some of these veteran moves, do you think that they were like moderate, these buyout moves, by the way, is what I'm referring to. Do you think that these were like moderate hedges against the idea that he might not come back, like that Durant might not come back? Or do you think they would have just done these moves anyway? Like, do you think that's in the back of their mind where Durant doesn't come back and they just want to fill it up with some veteran presence because that's less likely to make sort of boneheaded mistakes? Or do you think that these moves were sort of in the bag no matter where they were along the KD timeline?
Yeah, I get the feeling they would have made them anyway. Like the front office clearly has a vision for how they want to use all these guys. And like, you know, we'll get into what each guy brings shortly. And I do think that it's the interesting part is each one of these guys does bring something different to the table, especially offensively. It just seems like this whole team is like geared completely to offense. Like there's little to no thought about defense at any point, which is,
it's the one thing they lack with these three stars, right? So the offensive piece, it just eludes them. I don't know what it is.
I've said it like pretty much this entire year. It's like just a fascinating experiment watching this team because they are so much geared to one side of the ball. And they just have never really made an effort to do anything about that. So I think they would have made these moves regardless. I think they're just looking for, you know, veteran level guys with playoff experience, which you're looking at, you know, a guy like Blake Griffin, a guy like, you know, LaMarcus, those guys have that. And I think that's just the vision they're building. And they're saying, we'll figure out the rest later. Like, we got these guys in here. So I don't think it's a hedge against that.
All right, speaking of James Harden, 38 points, 13 rebounds, 38 points, 13 assists, 11 rebounds last game against Minnesota, 44 points, 8 assists. What a loser. Couldn't even get over double digits. Has 14 rebounds against Detroit. The guy doesn't really show it on the court in terms of overall emotion, but you can tell that he's playing every game with just like a huge love for the game. Even if he's not the biggest rah-rah guy, we've seen James Harden at this point embody joy, embody happiness, all the things that kind of come along with playing really, really high-level basketball. And that's why it's super easy for the second week in a row to make James Harden the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. Look, when you have a guy like James Harden on your team, it's pretty easy to give out the accolades when it comes to the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. Right now, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. That's Michelob Ultra. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. We know that joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game right now. James Harden bringing the whole game to the court every night. Joy, happiness, enjoyment, all the things he's showing every single night. Michelob Ultra, are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? James Harden, Michelob Ultra Player of the Week.
And of course, you can get all the sports news that you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of all of our local experts. You can follow the Locked On Today podcast with the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. We now, Matt, as we were highlighting there, right, some of these players that they bring in specifically, we have now LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be joining this roster, the recent addition of Blake Griffin on the team as well. What are we, you can start with either one, expectations for LaMarcus Aldridge on this roster when he comes in, 35-year-old veteran, obviously not the player he was once upon a time in Portland, or what affirmation have you gotten from Blake Griffin in this early sample size from him? Have you been pleasantly surprised by his game, or is it basically in line with what your expectations were?
Yeah, I think, well, I'll start with Blake since that's kind of the guy that I feel like I've literally been watching more, which I think is probably the smarter thing for me to discuss in that way. I think the signs have been good. One of the things I really thought was interesting, and this was from the Pistons game from, what was that, was on Friday, or so whenever this comes out, this was probably about a week ago. You know, that game itself, this guy's, you know, he gives you a guy when you're in the pick and roll with Harden. If they get a switch, he can post that up on the other side. It isn't just Harden attacking the mismatch. You have that on the other side of the pick and roll. And right now, you just don't have that at all from Claxton. I mean, his offensive game is a work in progress. I think that's the best way to put it. And you've never really had that from DeAndre. So that's a really interesting thing to do. He can either attack that by just backing the guy down and doing weird Blake post moves, the weird elbows flying. He's jumping off the wrong leg. He's finishing like over his head. It's the weirdest way of scoring, but he can do that. And I think that throws guys off and actually gets him some fouls just because of how odd it is. Or he can sort of make plays out of that and find guys in the corners. So I think on offense, it makes a lot of sense. You know, he's going to either be a short roll guy or a guy that's going to attack mismatches and transition. He'll be a connecting piece and find the open guy. I think where we don't have a great feel just yet, and I think people are already penciling this in, this is a win for Sean Marks. He does it again. All these things. I agree. I think you're getting exactly what you expected to get out of Blake. I would say on defense, there have been moments where he's, let's be honest, he's not particularly quick, and he's shorter playing center with short arms. So what that means is you had it yesterday. Carl Towns, and this would have been on Monday, Carl Towns posts up, gets to his jump hook. Blake stands there, hands raised, doesn't do a thing. That might as well be a wide open hook shot for Carl Towns. That's going to happen if you're playing him at center. On the flip side, yes, he's able to switch out to guys. That's very cool. He's willing to do it. I think at certain points it looks great. We saw that in the very first game in his debut. I think that was against the Wizards. He did a nice job getting in front of Bradley Beal. At other points, he's gotten blown by and kind of left in the dust, or he fouls because he's out of position. So I think that book right now, we don't have the final chapter in that in a lot of ways. We don't quite know how, I at least don't quite know how I feel about Blake yet. I think there's a role for him. I wouldn't be shocked if teams, because now, like, say what you want about Kyrie and Harden and KD. You can't really, I mean, you can, but you can't really, really attack them over and over and over on every possession unless you're like the Clippers with Kawhi and you can post up Kyrie. But Blake, you can kind of attack with a variety of different pieces. And the Nets, I mean, I think he might be the biggest hole in their defense right now, which is saying something because they're not a lockdown team. But if they're playing him out there in the crunch time, that's a piece for other teams to attack.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was concerned about his ability on offense for starters because, like, even when the Nets have played him earlier in the season, watching him a lot, I'm just from, like, on a random hate watching the Pistons at times. Like, other teams' guards would just guard him a lot, and that's always can be something of a warning sign, especially when other teams, they're just fine sticking, like, hiding a guard on you, and you're not really doing anything about it except for standing in the high post and then just passing and then just getting bought out, you know, 2 months later, which is essentially what happened with him. So the fact that that's been okay has been at least like moderately encouraging. I'm totally with you. He's been an absolute foul box for the last two games, 9 fouls in the last 39 minutes. That's hard to do unless you're trying to do it or you're just woefully, like you said, like just lost on those. Well, your combination of like not fast enough and lost is usually how you get that many fouls in that short of time. Do you wonder if like a guy like him, because like defense is a couple things as you're coming up, and you're much more of an X's and O's guy, obviously. So I want your opinion on this. Is defense is one, the thing that's pretty hard for like a regular fan to kind of pick up on. Two, for offensive first guys for a lot of their career, I do feel like there's a part where that just hasn't been asked of a player for a long time to be a defensive like stopper because your game was predicated on athleticism and the offensive side of the ball, and that was for forever with Blake, and now he's coming and playing just a totally different role there, which is he's just definitively a role player now. He's a bench role player. His name happens to be Blake Griffin and he used to be a superstar. He's not. Do you think that you think we're experiencing some of the problems like with that too, where this is just a late career shift into being asked to do something at a higher level, which was really never asked of him before outside of like late playoff chases, right? late, which by the way, the Clippers Clippers always lost in. But do you think that that's part of it too, that this is, we're coming to a defensive thing we're here that's much more important for him now, except he spent a lot of his career maybe not having been all that concerned with it?
Well, I just think he had a very firm ceiling on defense. And like you kind of like, and the thing is, like, there's not much he can do about this. I actually think, like, positionally speaking, he's taking all these charges and it isn't just because he's throwing his body in front of guys and just being, you know, wild about it. No, he's like rotating over early and he's actually one of the few guys on the Nets roster that's doing that. So I think as a team defender, at least when those rotations underneath the basket, he's one of the better guys at it. He's not going to give you help on other areas of the court, but he is really good at that specific skill set. The problem is everything else on defense is all based around what he can do in terms of his measurables, which are really just going to be his wingspan and how much ground he's able to cover vertically, which is not much, and his speed and what happens in switches. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's why I'm kind of like, I'm excited that he's playing well and it's exciting that he's energized about the role and he's bought into it in a lot of ways. And he's not just standing there and just, you know, passing out of clear mismatches. That's a good thing. But I will say, like, I'm not sure if I'm all the way there because I do see the pitfalls of playing him. And honestly, like, I mean, I think the big thing you have to do is maybe just tie his minutes to Claxton exclusively. I thought that's been a really good pairing because Claxton is able to hide some of his mistakes so far.
Well, and that's actually, so that ties into it, right? We mentioned about the piece of adding in these players. Claxton in this past game, Doug and I talked about it on the last episode, we're a little confused about where Claxton went and why a guy that's been steadily seeing an increase in minutes and has steadily shown that his best value is obviously his defensive value, wasn't getting utilized. The best that I could hypothesize was, Steve Nash playing with house money, trying some things out, and yet you only have so many games down the stretch of the season. Don't you need to cement Nicholas Claxton and what his role is going to be? Because whether it's adding LaMarcus Aldridge or having Blake Griffin, none of those guys are going to be the defensive versatility piece that Claxton is. Did you have any insight as to why that was the decision and what happened to him in this past game?
The only thing I can think of, and I know people were saying, oh, this was Claxton's worst game. I saw that take a couple of times, which perhaps, I don't know, I actually thought there were games where he was out of position, because really, like, what Claxton's there to do is play defense. Like, that's what they're asking him to do. He took a couple hook shots yesterday that I was, or on Monday, that I just thought were ill-advised. Like, maybe don't take a running hook shot. I don't know if, and it's funny, he's been talking about his bag, and he's a young player. Like, people are gassing him up on Twitter and saying he's the next great Hall of Famer. Like, yeah, he's probably going to take a couple of silly hook shots, but
Knock down a triple, 1 for 2 from the field. Come on, there's something in that bag, right?
There's something in there. It might be a couple years till we get that out of there. So I can't really blame him for that. And I don't know. I didn't think he was particularly bad against the Timberwolves because I thought he provided value on defense. I think teams are just going at him less and less. I actually thought there were some games early on where he was getting a little too switch happy. So, I didn't quite understand that. And also, it's the Timberwolves. Like, who cares? This is clearly like a piece that if you can get him integrated by the time the playoffs come around, and it doesn't mean you want him taking hook shots in the playoffs, but just get him integrated where you can feel like, hey, we're going to put this guy in there for 20 minutes. He knows where to be as a screener. You know, that's really the big thing right now you need him to do. Make sure you get him comfortable in those dribble handoffs, which I think he's been pretty good at. And that's all you really need him to do, but you need to give him the reps. You need to, not only just for him, but for you as a staff, you need to feel like, okay, there's an understanding of what's expected here.
All right, we're going to get into Matt's other thoughts on the lineups here, what he thinks are some of the best lineups that the Nets have the ability to throw out. I still wish you successfully avoided the LaMarcus Aldridge question for 10 minutes, so nice job there, but we're not going to let you off the hook. Don't think, didn't remember the beginning of the spot, but I'm not going to let you off the hook. I sometimes focus on the little things here. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at betonline.ag. Some of these reads are easy to read because we use the product ourselves, and that is definitely the case with BetOnline. Over there almost every night, checking out the lines, checking out those MVP odds. James Harden should be a little bit higher, but that some of that money might not have come in yet on BetOnline. And hey, maybe it's correct also just the way these things go. Basketball right now in full swing, March Madness, NBA every night, NHL on the ice. We mentioned baseball coming back. Bet Online has you covered for everything, plus the reality TV. Maybe you want to get in on some of those reality TV shows because you got a little bit of an edge there. Bet Online has you covered with the props there as well. It's just a one-stop spot for all of your sports action with news and scores. Also, and it's the best place to sign up and place your bets. You can sign up for free, but if you decide to make a deposit, know that if you use the promo code LOCKEDON, they're going to give you a 50% welcome bonus on that first deposit. That's just free money just for signing up and just for using the promo code LOCKEDON. So go check them out. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. And we've also been talking to you at length about Built Bar, another one that is super easy to talk about because it's just the best tasting protein bar on the market right now. You know, the Locked On NBA chat thread gets absolutely nuts when a new box of Built Bar comes in the mail because everyone just can't wait to rip into these things, try out all the flavors. It's a low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, just amazing tasting protein bar, 100% covered in chocolate. And right now they're running Built Bar Madness, and that's what happens when you have the confidence in your product so much that you can line up 64 different flavors against each other and have people vote on which is the best flavor. We're getting down. I think we're in the final four. Adam, cue up. What is the Built Bar matchup of the day?
Yeah, the stage is set here, man. Yesterday we talked about it. Could really, in your mind, Doug, cookies and cream or cookie dough chunk, who cares? Can they overcome mint brownie?
Oh, mint brownie. Sorry if I pause for a second, because whenever Adam's going to read the flavors, I close my eyes and think about it for a second because I'm just picturing the Built Bar. I did it yesterday, too. I instinctually found myself closing my eyes. Mint brownie's got to just win this thing, right? I mean, anytime you throw in mint and brownie together, easy win. Folks, these aren't ice cream flavors. These are protein bars that are actually healthy for you. Built Bar, you go over to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's LOCKED15, 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. Check back later in the week to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar, and go and buy Built Bar at BuiltBar.com.
And of course, friends, get more of the analysis on the top prospects available in this year's NBA draft with the Locked On NBA Draft Podcast. Scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. You can follow the Locked On NBA Draft Podcast on Odyssey or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. All right, we are going to force Matt to say something about LaMarcus Aldridge here as we close out with asking you the question of, as constituted right now, so you can maybe still dodge Aldridge if you want, what is the best five-man lineup for Brooklyn? Because, again, we start at the top about saying, was this about hedging the bets against KD's return and what that timeline could look like? I'll still put out there that the best version of this team involves guys that have been there, Jeff Green and Nicholas Claxton. I think everybody else, including DeAndre Jordan, who has been there as well, but DeAndre Jordan, whatever Aldridge ends up being, and whatever Blake Griffin is going to be for them, these are all just guys that can do partial things for you. But to me, in my mind, Green and Claxton are the best complementary pieces to a full, healthy roster heading to the postseason. Tell me that I'm right. Tell me that Doug is wrong, whatever he's going to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, if you're talking about best lineup, we're probably talking about closing lineup, right? Like, is that kind of the crux of this? All right. Yeah, it's got to be the big three. Let's assume that everybody's healthy because that makes things way more fun. I'm putting Joe Harris in there because I like him as a guy that if you put him in the corner, it's really, really tough to help if somebody drives to the basket. In fact, it's nearly impossible because that just means an easy kick out to that corner. And then your defense really needs to be really, really strong with like rotations behind that. So I'm not going to get too much into the X's and O's with it, but I'd want him out there for that reason. He makes it really hard to help. And then the fifth guy kind of depends who you're playing, depends on what, I guess what how the Nets are playing too on defense. So I would probably stick with Jeff Green, believe it or not. As much as I've liked this Claxton thing, I think you can get 50% of what Claxton's bringing from KD. You know, just as somebody, yeah, he's not going to be that same level. Like if a guy is ISOing against him one-on-one, like I think there's probably a better chance he's going to get blown by. It just seems like it's impossible to get by Claxton. So I think for that reason, I would be a little bit concerned, but I think you're going to want to go five out when it really, really matters. And for that reason, I'm going Jeff Green. I'm picking Jeff Green over Griffin. I just trust Green's shooting a little bit more, especially off those like pick and pop type of situations. So yeah, I think that's the lineup. And it seems like, you know, Nash has been into that since like the very beginning of the season. There's no way to move away from that.
Do you think that, okay, so then we'll go into it now then. Do you think that in this current iteration and like what we've seen from what they've wanted to throw out there in terms of bigs, like do you think there is a world where Aldridge gets any legitimate run here? I know kind of putting on the spot because he hasn't been in a uniform. He didn't play for the Spurs for a while. He was basically coming off the bench for them anyway because they had moved on sort of spiritually and physically from him, I think, over the course of the last, definitely a few months, but basically this whole season. So I know the part where maybe there's not enough like tail of the tape, but do you think this was a move just for a veteran presence, or do you think there's a world where they're able to kind of grab something out of him? He has been able to show the ability to slowly step out from beyond the arc over the last couple of years, sort of begrudgingly to start, but then did kind of eventually move that way. I mean, do you think it's like a kind of a Griffin thing? Do you think that there's like a plan to actually play him? And understanding that all of this is just totally opinion because we're still a few games from him even joining like any piece of the rotation here.
Yeah, I think they'll give him a chance. You know, I think that seems like, you know, I was actually surprised when Nash said that he has a chance to compete for the starting position.
What?
I just thought that was interesting that happened yesterday or on Monday in the pregame before the Timberwolves game. So that got an eyebrow.
I didn't hear that. My eyes just went wide when you said that.
Yeah, I was surprised about that. I think
so. There's a world where there's six guys playing 9.5 minutes apiece. Is that what we're looking at?
Because like DJ is already kind of getting phased out. Like DJ was barely in there against the Wolves, and you know, I mean, the minutes were okay, not great when he was in there. So I guess, yeah, I think what you see is, and here's the thing: like as much as DeAndre, people, you know, they don't love the drop coverage. They don't love that he can't guard stretch centers. I just prepare yourself because the LaMarcus Aldridge experience now on defense is not a fun time. He can't really guard and drop. You can kind of maybe have him, you know, do what's known as a hedge where he comes up to the level of the screen and retreats back. You can maybe get away with that. It's not a pretty experience. So then what you need to have is on the other side of the floor, he's providing that spacing with those pick and pops. Even if the ball doesn't necessarily go to him, it at least occupies the defense in that way versus DeAndre just kind of going down the lane over and over on rolls, which, by the way, has its value too. So I think we'll know pretty early. I kind of know, I feel like I said this about Blake as well, and I think to a degree, I stand by that take. You're going to know pretty early if these guys are going to help. Blake, I think, is past that test. I actually think there's a real way that he can help. I don't know how long that lasts. I don't know if he's going to be a playoff rotation guy. You know, I think at the start he will be, but as we go deeper and deeper in the playoffs, I don't know. He might get pushed out of the rotation because of some of the defense things I mentioned. LaMarcus, I feel even stronger about that because I just look like he's going to post up mismatches. He's going to post up. He's going to pick and pop. Do those little things outweigh, I think, the reality that he's not going to do very much on defense. It's kind of a calculation that way.
Yeah, we talked about the other day about getting beat up on the wings potentially if he's asked to defend out on the perimeter. So all those questions hopefully get answered over time. I was going to say let's get you out on a kind of a lighter question, but as I thought about it, it really isn't. The joke was going to be, why can't the Brooklyn Nets inbound a ball? But I actually think it's somewhat concerning in the sense that if the Minnesota Timberwolves can prevent you from inbounding, what are some of the better playoff teams going to be able to do against you? And when it comes down to crunch time in a playoff series in the Eastern Conference Finals, and all of a sudden you're out of timeouts and Joe Harris, I love this guy, but he seems to get flustered in that process. Everyone on this team seems to get flustered. Is this an easy fix when Kevin Durant's back out there? Or just explain it to me. You're the X and O's guys. Why is there only one play that they run that is incredibly ineffective?
Well, I don't know about the one. The one play thing is weird, and I get that they want to space the floor out, and I understand that to a degree. The problem is when you're trying to inbound the ball in your backcourt and you have two guys on the other side of the floor that are just completely out of the play altogether. Like, you're not even having one of those guys screen and then go to the other side of the floor. You're just keeping them right there on the other side to make sure you give your star usually as much space as possible. I think the thing, and I know that I actually asked Nash about this after the Detroit game when we ran into a whole bunch of inbounding problems that it was bad. I have to say I do kind of agree with his answer about there just being so many moving pieces and so many different guys doing the inbounds. I went through, I watched every single inbound from this year, and I have a video coming out on that, and there will be takeaways in that, and I don't want to give away too much. Because then, you know, what's the point? I don't want to. Then I might as well not even put it out. But I will say, I do agree with his answer that when they get back healthy and when they get everybody there, I don't foresee it being as much of an issue. That's just for the inbound position or possessions when they're up, when they have the advantage. When it's in the other position where it's like they're looking to go ahead, yeah, I would say they probably need to be a little more detail-oriented and try to run a little bit more of, you know, disguised actions and not just, all right, we're going to give it to our best player and just hope he can create something. Like, I think that's a different issue in itself. But for the things we've been seeing lately where they're up and they just need to get the ball in, I'm a little bit less worried about that for right now.
All right, my two big takeaways from that were, one, you didn't call Steve Nash Steve anymore. So
hey, what happened to Papa Steve?
I worked on it. I started. I said, Nash.
No. Now that you did it once in the last time, I'm bought into you just doing it every time. It's just a very, very leveled move. Like, I want that to happen on the podcast from now on. You call him Steve. You won't get made fun of anymore. Now it's just kind of just like, I don't know.
All right, I'll remember that. BD swinging piece.
Two, we just got a guy on here that just told you outright that he watched every single Nets inbound for the entire season. Like, go find another person.
Sometimes
I like
Monday.
To joke. Sometimes I do like the joke, like what would be my expertise level if I combined a bunch of different things together? Like, I won't go through what mine are right now, but I guarantee that Matt is like one of the very few people that doesn't get paid by the actual Nets organization that just spent his time going through every Nets inbound. But that's what the kind of stuff you get from one Mr. Matt Brooks, and why we want to have Matt Brooks on the podcast bi-weekly, not the kind that happens once twice a week, the kind that happens twice a month. All right, just no one gets confused. All right, that's Matt Brooks. You can follow him at Matt Brooks NBA on Twitter. Go check out all of his great stuff on Nets Daily as well. He just mentioned he's going to be writing about the inbounding piece. He wrote about James Harden as the MVP candidate. All that stuff is up there on Nets Daily. But that's enough about Matt. Now more about us. The way you can help the podcast is you can go rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure it's rate with an R, not with a W. Don't wait to review it. Just rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Maybe throw a nice little review in there as well. 5 stars or bust. Get us over 1,000 Twitter followers. Matt has like almost 6,000 Twitter followers. We're trying to get over 1,000. It's going to be hard for us to keep making an excuse to keep him on the show if we just can't get over 1,000. So go over to Twitter at LockedOnNets and give us a follow. We're very close. You could be the 1,000th Twitter follower.
And hey, listen, bi-weekly, twice a week, twice a month. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Just fantastic to have Matt Brooks on point on the podcast. Really appreciate it. Can't wait until next time, friends.